Today on the Illini Inquirer podcast, I got a treat for you because it was a treat for me. Illini all-time leading scorer, Deion Thomas, part of the Illini Radio Network, part of the development team at the University of Illinois Athletic Department. He joins us to talk Illinois basketball. Been too long since I've had Deion Thomas on the podcast. I told him that. But we recap and kind of react to Illinois' Final Four run, get his perspective, being on the sideline, being at all these big venues as Illinois makes its first Final Four run in 21 years. We talk about that season. We talk about where Brad Underwood is putting himself up to in the coaching rankings for Illinois history alongside his former coach, Lou Henson, though. Deion still would have Lou number one. And I don't disagree with that quite yet, but Brad's putting himself into that territory. And then I wanted to talk a lot with Deion about the front court. Deion played overseas, chose to play in Israel rather than try to continue going in the NBA where he would have had a role. And he was kind of firsthand of seeing the international influence come over to not only the NBA, but now the college game and what he thinks of that. And then we dive into David Mirkovic, who is one of Deion Thomas's favorite players. Talk about his game, how it can get better, and what makes him a special player. Talk about the Ivicic twins and their very different games and how they are so important for Illinois. And then we talk about the new backcourt of Stephen Vox, Quentin Coleman, and how Illinois can reach its ceiling, which is really high expectations. Final Four, Big Ten championship. This team has high expectations. How does it reach those things? Deion Thomas, a former coach, a former JUCO coach. He talks about Brad Underwood and why that has probably helped him during his career. And Deion, just one of the best players in Illinois history. It was great catching up with Deion. I think you'll enjoy this one. So sit back, relax. Deion Thomas for a half-hour chat here on the Illini Inquirer podcast. All right, happy to welcome in Illini's all-time leading scorer, Deion Thomas. Illini great. You can hear him on the radio call, of course, for Illinois basketball, and he's part of the gifts program here at Illinois, helping the fundraising for the University of Illinois Athletics Department. Deion, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well, Jay. How you doing, man?
Good to catch up with you. It's been too long, and I should have probably gotten you on during this unbelievable last season, the run to the Final Four, and obviously you have a great view of this. Being at all these games and being at the Final Four, I just thought, it was such a great experience for me personally, seeing at that stage. I'm just wondering your perspective of being long for that ride.
You know, I wasn't privy to be able to advance that far in the NCAA tournament. So to be a part of, as you mentioned, to be a part of just watching these young men's dreams come true and being on that stage. And, you know, I remember walking into the arena, into Lucas Oil, and was just blown away by the sheer size of that football stadium and how they had everything set up. It was uber exciting. Having all of the fans in the hotel to watching how Indianapolis just laid everything out. And you know, like I know you were there, seeing how that city turned orange with all of our fans being there to celebrate with our team and be a part of everything that was going on. I mean, it was super, super exciting, man. And hopefully we'll be going back there again.
Yeah, and one of the coolest scenes that I think is obviously the practice, the actual game, where it felt like there were 35,000-40,000 Illini fans there. But that hotel, the team hotel, that bar area, the lobby, like you just saw all these like Illini dignitaries coming through. You and you got Darren Williams and all these guys, Roger Powell coming through. Do you have any kind of scenes from that? Because that was so cool. Because you'd have Illini fans mingling with all of these greats, Whitman there, all of that. I thought that was a really interesting kind of place to be.
I mean, just the sheer sense of pride to see all of the former players, as you mentioned, having Darren back, having D back, going back to my era, having the 89 guys back. I even met, and I'm kicking myself right now for not being able to remember his name off the top of my head, but a gentleman that played in the 60s. Mm. You know, he and his family came back with his son who also went to Illinois, and, you know, we had our Varsity Eye event, which is the Varsity Eye, for those that may not know that listen, is all of our former athletes student managers, walk-ons are all a part of the varsity, including coaches. So anyone that really played and operated within that athletic space are part of the varsity op. So we had an event in Indianapolis, and to see all of the history of the guys that came back. I mean, Malcolm Hill was back. I mean, there were so many guys back. So to see all of those generations together, and as you mentioned, to see them all congregate in the hotel, the team hotel, with the fans, is one of the things, in my opinion, I believe that makes Illinois special, is because our fans are in my opinion, the elite in college sports. And then to be able to sit and share time with them was absolutely amazing. It was awesome.
I've talked about this with Kendall before, but Brad is kind of entering this Lou Henson territory when it comes to building a legacy, right? I mean, you just look at the numbers, you look at the NCAA tournament appearances, how far they go in the tournament. Obviously, very different coaches. But what's this feel like right now in the program compared to when you were getting recruited, Deion, and you committed to this program back in the day? Like, what's the feeling now compared to then?
Wow, you know, it's so different. And it's so different because the landscape has changed. You know, back when I was playing, I mean, every player on our team, with the exception of Scott Pierce, was from the state of Illinois. You know, so now you have kids and players that are from so many different places. And what is this to me? I mean, this is the state of college sports, of professional sports. I mean, the European game and American game is so interconnected. You know, again, harping back to when I played, I'm 6'8". Here I was, mainly played as a post player. You know, now you take a Will Riley, who's my size, or David Mirkovich, who's my size and maybe even bigger, and all of these guys are face-up players. So I think the way the game has changed is a huge part of this, but I agree with you 100%. Coach Underwood is in that rarefied air of Illinois coaches. Of course, I'm still a little biased to my own, but you know, Brad's amazing. He's done an amazing job. I recall after the record losses, 21 losses in his second year. He sat there and he told me, he was like, Deion, he was like, I know how much pride you take in this institution. He was like, along with all of the other guys, he was like, I promise you, this is the turnaround point. And that was indeed the turnaround point. And we have taken off like a skyrocket under his tutelage and his leadership. And, you know, this is what you want, especially when you're a former athlete, you know, someone that has bled on the uniforms. You want to see us where we are right now. So I definitely will not take any thing away from Coach. You know, if someone says he's the greatest coach in Illinois history, I'm not going to argue. You know, because my opinion is mine. I still think it's Lou. Yeah. But Brad, like you said, is right there.
What's made him successful, Deion, from your perspective?
You know, and I've told him this. His ability to adjust and morph and to be able to read the room and make changes, to listen to his guys and not be so hell-bent on, oh, this is my way and we're going to do it this way. You remember how it was in the beginning, Jay, when he came in and they were running that four cross press and trap and this and this, and man, we were getting carved up left and right. Then he brought Zach in, who had some NBA experience looking at how they defended on it, and then we shifted how we did things. You know, for him to be able to say, okay, you know what, I'm going to give me a, instead of it being on me and my assistant coaches, we're going to have an offensive defensive coordinator and allow them to go out there and do their thing. Most coaches won't do that. You know, a lot of coaches won't do that. They'll, hey, this is the way I run my program. And he was like, nope, we're going to do this. We're going to do this because it's better for the program. And then you look at how he was able to be able to shift, you know, with his players. We go from a Kofi Coburn, you know, who was dominated in post, probably, you know, the most dominating center to ever play at Illinois. I don't have a problem saying that because I'm not a center, Jay. Not a center.
I feel like, just as an aside, I feel like the farther we get away from it, the more we got to remind people like how impactful Kofi Coburn was on this program. They didn't start winning until that guy came here, two-time All-American, just an unreal player.
Man, a monster, and such a big teddy bear. I used to tell him, will you please hit someone with an elbow? I mean, I didn't want it to be the referee.
That's right.
Hit somebody. Be Shaquille O'Neal, man. You can still be a big softy and lay somebody out. But, you know, back to your question, to watch how Brad has been able to shift and mold and do what he needed to do. And probably the most important is getting his kids to believe in, you know, to not be out there for themselves, to understand that it's the name on the front is so much more important than the name on the back, while putting them in positions to be successful. And I think that's where, and in this day and age of the transfer portal, being able to understand how to use that. Now, that may be that JUCO experience, but being able to understand that, use it, mold it, and get things to fit the way you do, and then put those pieces together. I mean, Brad has just been absolutely amazing.
Dan, you're a JUCO coach. How much do you think that prepares you for this?
Oh, it definitely prepares you. I mean, because when you're a JUCO coach, from the opening of your season, you're already wondering who's going to be on your team. Who's going to be on my team at the break? Because when those grades come out and you're at the JUCO level, that could change really quickly. You know, and you know guys are going to be moving on at that time to the Division I level, or they're not going to be back on your team. So you're already preparing early, you know, for what your roster may look like in the coming months and then in the coming year. And I think it helps him tremendously, the way he organizes things, to be able to get a leg up on that.
I want to ask you, Dion, as a guy who chose to go overseas and to stay overseas, how have you watched, whether it was when you were over there and in the, you know, couple decades since, the international influence on this game, particularly in college now?
Well, I'll say this, Jay. I'm not surprised. The basketball that we're playing now, not just at the college level, but even at the pro level, was a European game that I walked into in 94. Just a little story. I remember my first practice, and I'm defending a guy named Nikola Vucic. No, I'm sorry. Slavko Kotnik was his name. And I'm defending Slavko. Slavko's about 6'10", 6'11". We're in transition, of course. You know, we're taught here in the United States, you run back, head under the basket, now you fan out and find your defense. And you can look at how our team plays. Slavko stopped right at the top of the key and knocked down a three. Where does David Mirkovic trail to? He'll run to the basket. They trail all the way, all of them trail right to the three-point line. So it's the exact same thing. I love it. Because what they did and they do in Europe is create complete players. And when I came back and I coached, the 8 years I coached, that was the philosophy that I took. I was not coming back creating centers or guards. My guards did post-up play, and my bigs were doing ball handling drills. We didn't do that when I was in school. So to see this shift, I think is great. I love it. I truly enjoy watching the guys do it, because I think it was necessary to continue to elevate the game. So to see it here, now if they would play more defense on the professional level, might be as excited as it is on the college level, because these kids are still out there giving their all.
I want to ask you, I mean, you said I'm not a center. I mean, we're born into our generations, right? Like, yeah. Do you think about what you would have been like in this generation?
Oh, man. Well, yes, I do, and I have. And, you know, anyone that knows me from playing here in Chicago, I grew up playing outside. You know, when I learned how to play basketball was when I got to Illinois. I mean, got to Simeon as a freshman. But we played outside all the time. So there were things that I was able to do and that I had in my game that coach just, you know, hey, Dion, that's not your job. You know, I don't know how many times I heard that, but they would put you in the box. In today's era, I would not have been in that box. And I think I would have been, you know, been able to showcase more of what I was already able to do. But the way these young kids really hone in on the sport that they're getting into just kind of improves their skill level even more. Now, does it make them basketball ready? I mean, that's just an argument that we'll have to talk about. But it definitely makes them more skilled because they're putting in that skilled work early. And it's not outside on the court. It just happens to be in the gym. Yeah. I think I would have been I would have been able to show a more complete game. But, man, I mean, Jay, Yeah, the toughness, and you, I think you'll understand this. Heart, I'll take heart over skill almost any time of the week. So if I would have had them both, because I had the heart, you know, just wasn't allowed to do a lot of the other stuff. That takes me back to a quick story before we move on. Brad Underwood asked me his first game that I broadcast, his first year, and he was like, "I got a question for you at the, you know, at the end of the game." I'm like, "All right." First thing he asked me when he walked over, he was like, "Deion, wouldn't you have loved to have played for me?" And I almost used an expletive, but I was like, "Yes, I would have." I mean, because LaRon Black had, I think, had just scored 39 points, and he was shooting the ball from three, posting up. You know, and again, these are all things that I knew how to do and was able to do, but just wasn't allowed to do. So this is one of the things, another thing I love about Coach. And he allows guys to do and play to their skill set. And I think this is also why he's had the success that he has.
Yeah, Keaton Wagler, unbelievable year. It was unreal to watch that. But I wanted to really dive into the front court with you here, Deion, because this was and is one of the best front courts we've seen at Illinois. And David Mirkovich had one of the best freshman seasons we've ever seen. It's just Keaton had the best, probably. So now David returns as one of the best players in college basketball, potentially. So for a guy who had some similar skill and size, what stands out to you about David's game?
Everything. I mean, let's start with his head. I mean, before we get to anything else, just the way he sees the game, the way he dissects the game mentally, the plays that he's able to make, not just for himself, but for his teammates. I mean, to watch him and Keaton come in and do that with that level, I mean, they were playing like seniors and they were freshmen. You know, and so to see someone with that youth be able to have the mentality of the game and not play 100 miles per hour every time they're playing, but they're able to slow the game down. This is something that normally takes place when you're a junior, senior, but they were doing this as freshmen. So very advanced thinking and how he was able to dissect the game. Now then we can get to his shooting ability. I mean, you know, how many people did we see slump off of him during the year and he just stops and pops? So to have that confidence to go along with the skill set, he is rightfully so. I mean, he was one of the best players in the country then, but because he's not flying through the air, you know, with massive dunks and things like that, he kind of gets looked over. But if he was he was a Carlos Boozer. I mean, not Carlos Boozer. I'm sorry, that's his dad. He was Cam. Like Boozer, just not as athletic, you know, and he's not playing at Duke. If he was, then he would have been in the same conversation with a lot of those guys because they have a very similar skill set.
What's his next step now that he's a sophomore, Deion? He's going to be towards the top of the scouting report. And I would imagine Illinois runs a little bit more through him, despite adding some good backcourt. So what's his next steps as a player as a sophomore?
Well, I mean, it's really going to be just a continued growth and understanding that, like you said, he is that guy. And, you know, and he may not be the number one guy on the depth chart, but he's going to be number two. You know, he's not falling further than three. So now that people are paying more attention to him, it's to continue that understanding and growth that, okay, when I can't, because there was some frustrations and you would see it during the game at times. So he's going to have to maintain being level-headed, keeping those things intact, but being able to make plays for his teammates, maybe even first, and then being able, once the help goes, being able to benefit off of that. So that continued patience. I mean, I'd love to see him be more athletic. I'm not Fletch. So I don't know how or if that's a possibility. I'm sure he'll improve somewhat. How much more, we'll see. But I think that's another thing that would benefit him. But his ability, you know, to play below the rim the way he does, I don't know if that's a major thing. But I'd definitely like to be able to see him get a little bit more flexible, man, in that hip area. Because when David runs, he looks like me. and I'm 55. That's right. But no, I love watching him play. David was one of my favorite players last year, along with Kylan Boswell, and I'm sure he'll be that again this year.
Tomislav Ivicic, now kind of the old head of this team. I mean, kind of was last year, but he's had these health issues, Dion, but boy, was he good in the NCAA tournament. And, you know, it's kind of interesting because this three-year period, Tommy's like the foundation kind of it all about how they're running offense, obviously what they can do defensively. So what's kind of been your view of Tommy's impact on this program and the impact he can make in his third year here?
Well, I love Tommy. And as you said, Tommy's been that anchor. He's a big that can make plays. He's a big that can step out. You know, his post-up game has improved. So he is a threat from all three spots on the floor. He rebounds the basketball extremely well. I mean, we don't get to where we were last year without Tommy. And you could see where the struggles, you mentioned the injuries. When Tommy, you know, dealing with the throat issues, dealing with the leg, we didn't look as crisp as we could have or should have possibly. But he's such a big part of what we do, whether it's making plays or whether it's knocking down late threes when we need someone to knock down one. Or, as you mentioned in the game, getting the ball inside and really being able to get dirty. You know, Tommy has a nasty streak in him, which is great because you and I have talked about this. That's what you need. You know, everybody can't be nice. You know, you need somebody to have a nasty streak, and Tommy has a little bit in him. So he's huge. He's hugely important to what Illinois does, who they are, and more importantly, to their identity. You know, you can walk on the court, and if people think you're a pushover, man, you're in trouble. And Tomislav does not allow that.
Zvonimir has just natural talent that I think everybody would want. And he did improve in some areas last year, but this is the first time he'll be in a program for back-to-back years, so a year two with a college program. What do you think that means for him as probably the best backup center in the country, I would imagine?
Well, I mean, depending on who you ask, and I have people come to me all the time, hey, do you think he's better than Tommy? Is he did, you know, and I'm like, well, it all depends on what you need.
Yeah.
You know, it all depends on what you need. And
I like having two of them. I'll tell you that much. Yeah.
Oh, man, I love having them both. You know, but, you know, having Big Z on the court changes the dynamic of everything this team does, you know, because of his ability to be able to defend at the rim. I mean, anytime you can take away people's teams' paint drives and he doesn't even have to block the shot. Just the fact that he's in there intimidates a lot of people when, going to the basket. Now, him being able to get up and down the court, I mean, NBA guys love it. You know, to be able to have a 7-1, 7-2 guy that can run the way he does, jump the way he does, finish the way he does, I mean, is impressive. What you mentioned, first time, had a real summer with the program. Can you imagine the 20 to 30, maybe even 40 pounds Fletch is going to put on him and how much better he's going to be? The mad scientist has been able to – Fletch, that's what I call Fletch. The mad scientist has had him in the lab, and I'm sure that he is going to look better, move better, be more explosive, and that's – people should be worried about that. Because I talked to some guys last year, and he was already getting in the conversation with NBA guys because he could run and move. Now, if he ends up shooting the ball at a higher clip and continuing with that and being able to continue that athleticism now with some bulk and some size so he doesn't get bumped off of his spots. And as you saw with Tommy developed that left hand, right hand jump hook. If Big Z could get that with his ability to get off the floor, man, this team, that's going to be a mad, crazy, crazy duo down low.
Yeah, unbelievable front court. Obviously, Andre and Jake both come back as well. New backcourt with some big shoes to fill. You mentioned Boswell. Can't overlook him, but obviously Keaton Wagler, one of the most fantastic seasons we've ever seen in an Illini uniform, let alone a freshman. But you had Stephen Vox, who comes as a bucket getter, kind of looks like the college version of Luka out there. Then Quentin Coleman, a five-star prospect, Dion, coming to Illinois. What do you make of that new backcourt and the challenges and the upside of them?
Well, I mean, the challenge is going to be how do they gel? And I'm going to take the second part first. Is how do they gel? If you look at the backcourt from last year with Keaton Wagler, with Kylan Boswell, with Stojakovic, and then, of course, Jake Davis was coming off, you know, in his role. But when you look at those top three guys and how they gel together and was able to play together, that's going to be the challenge of this team. How does Vach and Coleman fit in together? How does, well, I mean, Stojakovic is going to play the way Stojakovic does. He's an upperclassman now. He understands how to put himself in those positions. But how do those two guys gel with everyone else? And they definitely have the ability. Coleman, I'll say this, have not seen him in person, but everything that I've seen on video and the people that I've talked to, man, they're saying that, you know, you've heard this. Well, then this kid could be leaving after 1 year. Now, I'm waiting to see it. Haven't seen it myself. But if you have guys that are on that next level that are saying that he's that good, then they have an idea that he's that good. So Stojakovic has already proven himself, not just last year. He proved himself at Cal and even as a freshman at Stanford. I mean, this kid can play. And if he did not shoot, 24% from three, he wouldn't be with us right now. He'd be in the NBA if he shot 35.
That's right.
You know, so he is an NBA talent, and the only thing he needs to work on is to continue his shooting. Now, I don't want him out there pumping up a bunch of threes. I want Andrei Stojakovic to do what Andrei Stojakovic does, and that's get downhill. You got someone like Stefan Vach that can stand out there and make baskets, because I watched him a couple games last year when he was at Providence, and I was impressed, highly impressed. To be quite honest, Jay, I thought the kid was going to put his name in the draft. So when I heard that he landed with us, I mean, I jumped up and down, especially after, you know, knowing that Keaton was going to be gone. You lose a shot maker, you want to be able to get a tough shot maker. And that's what he is. And then with his size and his ability to make plays, I mean, I've been keeping up with him while he's been playing over in Estonia. Man, he is killing. So if he brings a little bit of that back, then we're going to be impressed.
All right, Dan, before we let you go, just, I mean, heavy as the crown. This team's got huge expectations, right? I mean, I think they'll be the Big Ten favorite entering the year with all the changes happening at Michigan. I think Michigan State will be strong still. But it's kind of like Final Four or bust again. I mean, it's kind of national title or bust for this program, which is, it's ridiculous expectations, but I know Brad embraces that. So what's the key to this team, you know, reaching its ceiling wherever that may be?
Well, the great thing about this is you have so many guys returning that were already in the program. So those upperclassmen, those guys that have played and understand how Brad coaches and how they're teaching and with the systems that they run, you're allowed to be able to teach that to the new guys like Vach or Quentin Coleman to be able to help get them up to speed quickly. If they can gel properly, like last year's team, and you know, it's rare that you have a team where everyone likes each other. And you had that last year. I hesitate in saying this, but I'm going to. This team could be better than last year's team from a skill level, a maturity level, an understanding of what the system is level, understanding what the Big Ten is about, having made a deep run and being able to translate that to the new people that are on your squad. You have a serious chance of being better than what you were last year. And this is, like you said, you know, this feels like a Final Four minimum or championship team or bust. I don't know if it's a bust because, right, you know, you can't account for injuries or things of that nature. And it's always extremely difficult to win, but
and there are other great teams, right? Like there are other great teams in college basketball.
Yes, you're going to have a ton of other really, really good teams. You know, Duke isn't going anywhere. North Carolina's not going anywhere. They're always going to be, you know, stacked. So it's really going to be, in my opinion, you know, how quickly this team can come together, because that is probably the most important. You know, are they willing to sacrifice of themselves for the greater good? You know, like I know Brad is all about winning, you know, and this is, I think if he can get the guys and everyone to believe in that's what's most important, then I think that gives you a leg up. if those guys can learn, the freshmen and the guys that are going to be playing in those key role positions, can they learn quickly and adjust and get themselves in tune? So, you know, what's it going to take? It's really just coming together and understanding what's important, because they definitely have the skill and they definitely got a bunch of guys that can put the ball in the basket. So that, and defensively, get in and understand what Coach Cam is trying to get you to do and understand it and buy into it, because if they can do as they did, they don't have to be a great defensive team. They just have to be a good one, because offensively, just like last year, this team's going to put up points. And, you know, so if they can get some key stops here, they're going to put themselves and play with toughness. You know, because a lot of people, and I hate to run on or even go back, but a lot of people were like, man, we played bad against UConn. I'm like, dude, we held UConn to 34%. We just didn't make shots. There were four instances, and they're sitting in my brain right now, four instances where we lost that game. And what did we lose by? 4 points?
Yeah.
I mean, you changed that. And two of those baskets were three-point shots off of offensive rebounds. Totally changes the picture and how things look. So we've got to clean up those little things, understand possessions count and not allow them to happen. But it's more important is coming together, learning the system, and really giving your all. This team is really good. And I'm super excited to be able to sit on the sideline with you and watch them play and get to meet all of the young guys and the newcomers when I hit campus. But this should be a really, really exciting season.
Deion Thomas, it's always a treat catching up with you, man. It's good to see you, and appreciate you dropping all the knowledge. You're the goods, man.
Always a pleasure, Jay. My pleasure.
Great stuff with Deion Thomas. Really enjoyed catching up with him. We've had a lot of fun on this podcast. It's a little slower of a time in the college sports calendar, probably the slowest. So trying to enjoy that. Went to saw the Odyssey. Fantastic. Just amazing how much Christopher Nolan put on screen and barely had any special effects. Just an epic movie about an epic, right? It was fantastic. So go see it, and I think you'll enjoy it. Trying to read a little bit more, but like, I've really enjoyed these podcasts to talk about with Joey, the football side of things, basketball, obviously big expectations. And then next week we'll be at Big Ten Media Days, and we're gonna bring it a little bit. We got Brett Bielema, Kaiten Hauser, Juice Clark, Matthew Bailey. We're going to have some national people on this, potentially some Big Ten beat writers as well. So a lot more coming on this podcast as we gear up for Big Ten football season and Illini football season. And of course, we'll cover everything with Illinois basketball that is coming along the way. So stay tuned for all of that. We continue to have a lot of premium content at IlliniEnquirer.com. Kyle just put up his Ethan Brown player outlook, a really interesting prospect that Illinois has added. Can he find a way into the rotation? Kyle has great breakdown of that. Joey just put up his 10 potential breakout candidates for Illinois football in 2026. I'll have a position battle piece going up on the website as well. And if you missed our player outlook series, position primer series, excuse me, on all the football positions, I think you'll enjoy those. It's a really in-depth look at the personnel, what the guys did last year at that position, and what the expectations are for this year. Some concerning, some really exciting. So go check that out at IlliniEnquirer.com. And if you're not a member, 50% off for your first full year of VIP access at Illini Enquirer. We appreciate your support there. I think if you diehards, you're really going to enjoy all of that. But we appreciate you listening to the Illini Enquirer podcast. Give us a follow, a rating, and a review wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're watching us on YouTube, yep, hit that like button below, subscribe to us, and hit that notifications bell for whenever we have new videos. But for Deion Thomas, I'm Jeremy Warner. Everybody have a great day. Take care of each other. And we'll talk to you next time right here on the Illini Enquirer podcast.
Bye, everybody.